Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-double-T, coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010. We are talking with Robert Salas about the Pentagon's mysterious UFO program. The New York Times, of course, broke that story back in mid-December. We haven't heard much since. And I think you'd excuse Robert if he's not terribly impressed with that. I think he'd be far more interested if the New York Times would engage their resources and their intellectual curiosity and perhaps investigate UFO incursions over nuclear missile sites. He witnessed just such a thing back in 1967. We'll get back to that conversation and your calls in a moment. Hey, you've heard about the Battle of Los Angeles. Speaking of Los Angeles, or speaking of UFOs, how about the invasion of Salt Lake City? Well, it has nothing to do with UFOs. It's George Norrie Live, coming to the Gene Wagner Theater. That's in Salt Lake City, of course, happening Saturday, March the 10th, 2018, from 5 to 8 p.m. He'll discuss, or his guests, and he will discuss ancient technology with Jason Martell, the man who died two times and lived to tell about it, Danian Brinkley, a ufologist, Nick Pope. George will also sing a few songs with a live band, and you can take part in a Q&A with each guest. So don't miss out on this. You want to get in on the action because tickets are going to go fast. You can call the box office at 801-355-ARTS, A-R-T-S, 801-355-2787. Online tickets at artssaltlake.org, artssaltlake.org, and a meet and greet following the show. All right, back to your questions and comments for Robert Salas when Coast to Coast AM continues. Robert Salas stays with us, former U.S. Air Force, former FAA official. Robert, how would you describe the UFO cabal? For example, who is it comprised of?
Well, I believe the cabal is comprised of elements or individuals with some of the intel agencies. We know the CIA has been involved almost from the beginning of the CIA. So I think there are individuals within various intelligence agencies working together with other intelligence agencies in other countries, exchanging information. I have, secondhand evidence, word of mouth that this is going on. I can point to a lot of instances where countries had military organizations, intel agencies within military organizations have exchanged information with U.S. and other countries on UFOs. So, but I do think it is a viable organization that is holding these secrets for their own reasons. And it's speculative as to what those reasons are now. Initially, I think they were trying to protect the public from some panic or some injury to our institutions, et cetera. But now I think it's more about greed, basically, because it's when you think about it, these secrets are very powerful, and they can be used as currency to exchange information and on some of these secrets.
To what extent do you think the cabal has infiltrated the mainstream media? Would they, for example, and I know I'm asking you to speculate, or maybe you have some secondhand information or firsthand information, but to what extent has the cabal infiltrated, let's say, the editorial section of the mainstream media, the editorial board, or the management of television networks and so forth?
That I have no idea. I haven't even thought about them infiltrating editorial boards of newspapers or media. I think they do infiltrate UFO groups, UFO organizations. because that's where some of the action is. They want to know what the public knows or what these investigators know about the subject. I think the way they apply influence on editorial opinions and newspapers is, like I said, giving and taking away access to government agencies, which is kind of a lifeblood for most of the newspapers and media. They want to make sure that they have contacts within government so they can, write stories. And so I think that is the primary way they control things.
All right, let's go to the wild card line. Sean is in Columbus, Ohio. Sean, welcome to Coast AM.
Hi. Pleasure to be with you tonight. This is a subject that I've, read about quite a bit, but there's a question that I have never heard an answer to. Was anyone ever able to determine how the UFO shut the missiles down? And if so, were they ever able to create something to protect the missile so it doesn't happen again?
Ha ha. All right. Go ahead, Robert.
Actually, Boeing thought they isolated a particular piece of equipment. Let's see if I can remember what it's called. But I don't recall the exact piece of equipment, but they were able to do a bench test and say that a particular signal reached this piece of equipment in the guidance system, that it would create the shutdown sequence of the missile. But like I said, the objects, the UFOs, would have had to send a particular signal to this particular piece of equipment to each of the missiles separately and within seconds of each other. So we, of course, had nothing in our inventory that could have done anything like that then or now in the method that I described. So I doubt that we have anything installed that might protect against a similar thing in the future.
Sean, thank you for that. Good question. West of the Rockies, Howard is in Vancouver, Washington. Howard, good morning, good evening. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hello, Richard and Robert. I had a thought I'd like to throw out there regarding these missile shutdowns that occurred. Perhaps the shutting down the ICBMs was merely incidental to what their real objective was. Perhaps they were actually trying to hack into NORAD's computers so they could find the total extent of our defensive capabilities. What might you think of that?
I don't think that what they're trying to do is, let's say, disable us from self-protection or disable our nuclear weapons as a whole, or our ability to detect incoming missiles or anything like that. I just think that what they did was a message, and that message was get rid of the nuclear weapons. They did not damage our missiles. They simply disabled them temporarily. There was no damage to any of the equipment. I don't consider what happened to me as being a aggressive attack per se by extraterrestrials. Again, this happened over 50 years ago. If the ETs wanted to do damage to our military capability, they could have done a lot worse then and in the interim.
Howard, thank you for that. Whoever they are, have the capability of shutting down 10 Minutemen nuclear missiles with a snap of a finger, I would suggest that in their eyes we don't have a defense system. Maybe that's part of the rationale for the cabal keeping a lid on this secret, Robert. They know we're defenseless and they don't want to panic us. the public, that is, or that may have been initially their concern.
Well, yeah, it certainly makes sense that if the government admitted that we have no way of protecting ourselves from what these objects can do to our most sophisticated weapons, that would be pretty embarrassing. And what could they say then? You know, we're just at their mercy.
Speaking of nukes, if the UFOs, the pilots of these craft, are concerned about our handling and our use of nuclear weapons, the question that jumps to my mind immediately is, where were they during Nagasaki and Hiroshima, even before that, at Trinity?
Well, in my book, I point out that in 1945, before the first test, the first nuclear bomb, UFOs were seen over Hanford nuclear site, and that's where the plutonium, I believe, was being refined at Hanford, Washington. And so there is a record of that, 1945, before the first atomic bomb test. There have been witnesses at other nuclear weapons testing. I think they've been around for a while. And of course, they were seen during World War II.
Oh, they've been around, sure. Ezekiel's wheel, I mean, thousands and thousands of years. But could they not have stopped Hiroshima and Nagasaki if they had wanted to? Surely they could have.
Oh, now you're talking about another thing. Yeah. Yes, they probably could have. So that begs the question, would they in the future stop a nuclear war? Hard to say. I'm not so sure. I think what they want us to do is to figure out a way to get rid of these weapons because they're not weapons of war. They're weapons of mass destruction. And all they can do is, if we went into war, is create havoc with our civilization and possibly do us all in.
If the pilots of these crafts are extraterrestrial, let's say they're from Sirius or Andromeda or someplace like that, wouldn't a nuclear blast on Earth be like lighting a match, 100 miles away? No one would take notice. And unless they're in our own galactic backyard or they're here.
Yeah, one of the critical questions is, what are they doing here? What is their agenda? And I think the fact that they are here and have been here for a long, long time shows that they are interested in us, how we are handling things here, how we are protecting the planet, and possibly worried about if we destroy our own planet, or if we go start investigating other planets, which we intend to do shortly, we're going to be sending people to Mars. How are we going to handle that? In other words, are we going to respect those other planets? Undoubtedly, there's life out there somewhere, and how are we going to interact with that life? So, I think part of the reason they're here is they're monitoring how we're handling things. And so far, I don't think we're doing too well.
West of the Rockies, Richard's in Palm Desert, California. Richard, good morning, good evening.
Good evening. I was a guard on a Minuteman II missile on Vandenberg Air Force Base about September 1964. And those were not armed missiles. We would send them down the Pacific test range to test the missile. And the condition of that missile is what we called green was an empty silo, or amber was a silo with a missile in it, but not ready for launch. And then red, we didn't put guards on the red, just on the ambers and greens. And it was the night shift. and I was approached by this, I'm going to call it an entity. It came out of the fog. It was a foggy night, and the missiles were silos that lit up with a large overhead light that kind of reflected off the fog, but I could see the shadow coming up. I actually thought it was an Air Force officer because he seemed to be wearing his trench coat and very humanoid in appearance. And as he came towards me, I realized that there was something very, very wrong. And we were armed, and I had a 38 Smith & Wesson, and actually intended to pull that Smith & Wesson, and I was totally paralyzed. There was nothing I can do, and just went into complete panic. And the next thing I knew, I was just out cold. Apparently, in the morning, and it was several hours later when I came to, that enemy was entity was with me, but didn't want me to look over at it. But it was communicating with me, and it was just saying it was sorry that it had scared me so bad, but they needed to see the missile. And you know, the Minuteman had a ring around the top under entered to a separate access door that had the launch computers in it because they had to be separate. They couldn't be connected to main computer banks because each missile was fired separately or independent. And apparently, they wanted to go down and check out that equipment, which I really feel later, as I heard about Maelstrom, that they wanted to be able to know enough about that equipment to disable it. But so that was my experience. Yeah, I never told anybody.
Richard, that is absolutely fascinating, mind-blowing. You've never shared this with anyone before.
Oh yeah, I actually shared it with Art Bell maybe.
All right.
And
well, thank you. Can I make a comment about that?
Please, Robert, go ahead.
I have been in contact with a witness, a very credible witness, who was on the one of the maintenance teams that went out to one of the Echo flight missiles that had been disabled in our incident. And he went down to do a startup procedure using his manual, his tech order. And halfway through it, he was asked by the topside guard to come up, and they saw the topside guard showed him ball of light, orange ball of light that was hovering over the facility. He was frightened. They were both frightened, but the maintenance man felt he had to go back down into the missile maintenance bay and continue his checklist to get the missile back up on alert. He told the guard to report the light. But while he was down there, this object was overhead. He would go through his checklist, and when he got to a particular point, the missile shut down again. Now, he couldn't understand it, but he kept doing this while this object was still overhead. And each time he got to a particular point in the checklist, the missile would shut down again. This object was essentially telling him that they knew exactly how our systems work, down to the, you know,
exactly, down to the last diode. Listen, Robert, I got to break away. Richard in Palm Desert, thank you so much for checking in with that story. More of our conversation with Robert Salas, the Pentagon UFO disclosure, UFOs and nukes, and the UFO cabal. When Coast to Coast AM continues, here's the Moody Blues taking us into the break with Ride My Seesaw on Coast to Coast AM. We'll get back to our conversation with Robert Salas, former U.S. Air Force, former FAA official, talking UFOs and nukes and the Pentagon UFO program. Before that, I just mentioned about the George Norrie live landing in Salt Lake City. Well, he's also coming to Scottsdale, Arizona at the Virginia G. Piper Theater. That's in Scottsdale, Saturday, April the 21st, 5 to 8 p.m. And he's got quite a cast with him. Spirit Traveler, Sonia Grace, astronomer and master of all things space, Dr. Sky, that's Steve Cates. We'll end the evening with a UFO roundtable featuring some of the most respected people in ufology today. Dr. Lynn Kitai, of course, from the Phoenix Lights incident, Melinda Leslie, an area talking alien experiences, Travis Walton, John D'Souza. George will also sing a few songs with a live band, and you can take part in a Q&A with each guest. Again, don't miss out. Tickets are going to go fast. You can call the box office at 480-499-8587. 480-499-8587. You can also get online tickets at scottsdalearts.org. scottsdalearts.org. Don't forget the meet and greet following the show. All right, I want to share this story with you. It's just so wild. I got to tell you about this. Greg Bishop, our webmaster tonight, has posted this in the news section up at the website, coasttocoastam.com. Now get this. This is in Newsweek magazine. And there's this Australian lawyer by the name of Bob Gosford. He's a bird lover, and he stumbled on an odd quest one day when he read an account of an indigenous Australian who watched a hawk apparently use a burning twig to deliberately spread fire. Gosford was so fascinated by this, he wondered whether others had seen the same phenomenon, and he and his co-authors have now tracked down 20 more examples that they share in a recent paper published in the Journal of Ethnobiology. The paper comes in response to skepticism about the behavior. Gofford and his co-authors found evidence that this behavior, again, birds of prey, essentially firebombing the countryside in Australia, this behavior was well known to indigenous cultures and to firefighters. They believe these raptors are spreading fires in order to scare prey out of hiding and make it easier to catch dinner. The birds in question are black kites, whistling kites, and brown falcons, all birds of prey found in Australia. There you go. So consider this fair warning. Don't let your budgie play with matches. Back to my conversation with Robert Salas and your phone calls when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Robert Salas stays with us. Robert, do you foresee any circumstance in which it would be necessary in your mind for U.S. Military personnel to disregard their oath of confidentiality and simply come forward and talk about what they've seen regarding UFO incursions, whether we're talking about nuclear bases or otherwise?
Well, funny you should ask. We just saw this movie, The Post, where people did come forward and release classified information, and was judged by the Supreme Court that the government really didn't have a right to keep this from the public. And I think the UFO question is kind of in that ballpark, that it is such a profound thing, this phenomenon, and that could impact all of us, that I'm not trying to encourage anybody.
No, and I'm not suggesting that you are. No, no.
Information to come forward, but I can see a justification for it. You know.
Jason is in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Jason, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
How you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah. I was active Army back when I was 17. I signed in, but I was 14 Tango, and the Patriot missile truck driver, and worked on the truck and everything. But back then, system we had, it shot I think 4 missiles, and we heard rumors about the ones that could shoot up to 16 were coming out. I don't know. I mean, the Air Force, I'm not as smart as them guys, but they might have technology 20, 30 years ahead of time that they're working on, that they're just fooling around, messing around the civilians and Army people and Air Force. And who knows what you're looking at? That was a thought that I had on the subject.
It's an interesting thought, Jason. It's certainly one that's crossed my mind. But then the question is, why would the Pentagon be spending even a paltry sum of $22 million to study their own people?
Well, I have another idea on the subject. If it's not that, there is another option. I can give you my opinion on it if you'd like.
We are all ears, Jason. Yes.
All right. It's either the military is ahead of time and they got stuff that they're not telling people about, or I don't believe in aliens and all that stuff. But I do believe, and I'm not preaching or anything like that. I'm not no evangelist, but I do believe that the devil is a good artist with confusion. And he does all kinds of things to make men believe all sorts of different things. Who knows what he does? Who knows what God allows him to do? I don't know if you're a Christian or not, but if you believe in God, there's a devil out there, and he can do a bunch of crazy stuff. And that's what I think it is. If it's not the military, it's people seeing demons fooling around like little kids, you know, confusing people. That's what I think it is.
Well, Jason, you know, one man's extraterrestrial is another man's interdimensional, and we might be talking about the same thing here.
I've listened to the program before on that. That's what I think they are. It's just, he likes to, you know, the Trinity has been found all over the earth, South America, Egypt, everywhere. And I don't believe in Catholicism, but I believe the Trinity thing is kind of messed up. But anyway, the point is, it's been all over the earth. And how did that happen? I mean, same thing with seeing aliens. It's happened all over the earth. The devil's a good, he likes to confuse men. He thinks of us as dumb animals, and he wants to confuse us. And that's what I think.
I think it's a perfectly legitimate line of inquiry, albeit it's not one that necessarily flies with the majority of the UFO community. It happens to be one that I give strong credence to. Let's get Robert in here.
I have no comment, really. I know there is that line of thought that these so-called aliens or extraterrestrials are somehow devil-inspired, but I just hadn't considered that. Let's just put it that way.
Well, or if we're talking interdimensional, and if you want to use the term angelic realm, we could be talking about both sides. We could be talking about fallen angels and the good kind, the good angels. Because there does seem to be that dichotomy, particularly with alien abduction, and you've had an experience, Robert, where some have had a hellacious experience, and others have had a wonderful life-affirming experience. So who knows? Maybe we're dealing with fallen angels and the messengers of God. I mean, I don't know, why that's necessarily such a stretch, but. Those are sort of the two schools out there. And Jason, we thank you for your call. Let's say hi to a wildcard line caller. Mike is in Houston, Texas. Mike, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hey, Richard. How you doing? I love your work. I enjoy it when you sit in. And I especially love your bumper music. It's always excellent.
Appreciate that.
That monkey's tune was especially good to hear. Robert, I appreciate your service to our country and your courage to speak out and write your book and talk about this issue. Let me say something about the last caller. I did see the movie that came out on Thursday, and it was from a Christian perspective. I am a Christian, but it left too many questions unanswered, and so I was a little disappointed in it. But here's my take on it. First of all, my first question is, Robert, how do you think they know so much about our technology? Now, I realize that they're an advanced civilization, you know, ET, and that they probably have advanced scanning systems, but how is it that they know so much about our missile technology and are able to access it? And do you think they're able to read the minds of our military people or scientists and able to gather information that way or through abduction? And also, has any do you have any thoughts on whether or not the DOD, Pentagon, have looked into why they're so concerned about us and our planet, out of all the planets in our galaxy? Is it possible that they cohabitate this planet and they have bases here? And has any investigation gone into looking to whether or not, because I know that USOs have been seen off of California and the Catalina Islands there. There's been craft seen around the tops of volcanoes. There's speculation about possible bases on the moon as well as Mars. So I was wondering if you have any thoughts about whether or not they've investigated whether ET is cohabitating this planet with us. And,
all right, Mike, there's about 10 questions in there, all of them great. Let's start with the, how do they know so much about our technology?
Let me just start with the bases, because I think there's ample evidence that, yes, indeed, they do have bases on the planet underwater. There has been a couple of very significant incidents where UFOs have been seen underwater and people reporting that there are bases under there. Also, many reports of ET craft or UFOs having bases within volcanoes or within mountains. And again, I've traveled through many places in the world, and I've heard many stories to that effect. So, yes, I think they do have bases here. Going to the what was the other part of the question?
He wanted to know how they know so much about our technology, and can they read minds?
On that aspect, he did mention the idea that they could read our minds, and again, there's ample evidence from abductees, from experiences, that they do indeed read our minds. They communicate telepathically, so they could very well have either through abductions or other means read the minds of our scientists, people who are engineers who are working on these weapon systems. They have that capability, so I think that's how they may have gleaned our technology. What was the other question?
There were quite a few of them. Mike, was there one more? You could just give us your top question that you'd like Robert to answer. Make it a short one.
I think Robert pretty much covered it there.
Excellent. All right.
And he hit on some points that I've thought about, and particularly the moon. I'm wondering what the Chinese and the Russians might be looking for on the moon, as well as our own, return to the moon. So there's, been a lot of rumors about what our astronauts saw up there during the Apollo missions.
Yeah, well, you may know or you may not know that one of the witnesses in 2001, when we spoke at the National Press Club, was with NASA. And she was a photo analyst who had seen structures on the moon in some of the photos taken by NASA. There's a data point for you right there.
Was she asked to airbrush them out?
I think so. I believe so. If you get a hold of the testimonies, I know Greer put out a book of the testimonials of the witnesses. I forget her name offhand, I'm sorry, but she did work for NASA. I remember her story of seeing these photos of structures on the moon.
All right. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more call. We go to the first-time caller line. James is in Boston. James, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hello. How are you, Michael?
It's Richard and Robert.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I don't have a question. It's more of an observation. I believe that art imitates life. And if you've ever watched, like, a Star Trek program, they have a prime directive not to interfere with another species. You know, you mentioned Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And, you know, why wouldn't they have stopped something like that? It's just my opinion. Like I said, I you know, art imitates life. And I, who knows, you know, maybe people in Hollywood have more access to this stuff than us, or they've spoken to people. Maybe it's just the fact that they can't interfere with us. I mean, they can observe us, but not interfere.
All right, James, good point. Your thoughts, Robert, on that?
I tend to agree that somehow the ETs have decided not to interfere too much with what we're doing. They want to see us evolve and to a higher level of consciousness so that we take care of you know, important issues like nuclear weapons on our own without their help. They want to see us get there on our own.
All right, James, thank you for that. Let me ask you, Robert, is... No, it's that's why we have you on the program.
Okay.
As we wind things down here, Robert, would you care to give maybe a nudge or a suggestion or an assignment to U.S. military personnel and how they might be able to push this needle forward on UFO disclosure?
We have, by we, I mean myself and others, have talked to military witnesses and held their identities secret. So if any of them want to contact me, I certainly would talk to them and hold their identities secret, because I understand what's involved. It's very serious to have classified information and release it to the public. But I guess they should research the existing incidents involving military facilities and understand what's happened in the past. Other people have come forward. Many people have come forward, actually, military people, and discussed their experiences with UFOs. So if they can, possibly, I would encourage them to come forward and increase the volume of information that we have on this subject. That everyone
can can they get a hold of you at spiralgalaxy.org, Robert?
No, I don't think that's a good way to get a hold of me. You can contact me on Facebook. I've got a site there, and also. I'll give you my email address. It's rsolis15@roadrunner.com if they want to contact me there. rsolis15@roadrunner.com.
rsalas, S-A-L-A-S, 15@roadrunner.com.
That's right.
Bob, thank you so much for this. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate it. Great talking to you again. Stay warm up there.
No problem. No problem. Thank you so much. New York Times, the ball is in your court. All right, we have British psychic medium Craig Hamilton Parker standing by in the meantime. Here's Clarence Carter taking us into the break with Snatching It Back on Coast to Coast AM.